2021-578. NASCAR Holdings Incorporated et al. Versus Jeremy A. McLean, Tax Commissioner of Ohio et al. For the appellant, Mr. Hayden.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. Good morning. My name is Jeremy Hayden, and I am counsel representing the appellant NASCAR Holdings. I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. There are five principal errors by the BTA in this case, but I would like to highlight two of the errors in particular. First, for the vast majority of receipts at issue in the case, the so-called broadcast receipts, the BTA permitted the commissioner to change his final determination and the statute he relied upon in direct contravention of the statutes meant to protect taxpayers from such last-minute changes at the appellate level. Second, the BTA allowed the commissioner to tax NASCAR's receipts just because an Ohio consumer can walk into their local Walmart, Target, or retailer and purchase NASCAR-themed products from a shelf, or turn on their TV or mobile device in Ohio and watch NASCAR races. In fact, much of this case rehashes many of the same arguments the commissioner made in Defender, particularly that but for the Ohio consumer, there would not be a market. This statement, while factually correct, is irrelevant for purposes of the citizen statute issue. The commissioner is attempting to once again ignore the plain meaning of Ohio statutes and apply the Ohio CAT in a way that is not only unfounded in statute, but is also unconstitutional and frankly unworkable from a practical point of view. The commissioner would have you look past NASCAR's licensing arrangements and instead tax NASCAR as if NASCAR brought the products into Ohio. But these products and broadcasts are brought in Ohio by others, like the cable broadcast companies that Fox contracts with, not NASCAR. Instead, in nearly all cases, NASCAR charges an annual flat fee for the licenses to its intellectual property for the duration of the licensing contracts, which are long-term in nature. All the licensing parties are located outside of Ohio, and the contracts themselves are executed and performed outside of Ohio. Further, none of NASCAR's receipts are based on the right to use NASCAR's intellectual property in Ohio. As we will discuss, the statutory phrase based on is pivotal in this case, and it takes on the same importance as where the benefit is received in Defender. In Defender, it was important to look at how Defender's customer, ADT, benefited and not how the ADT's end user benefited. Here in NASCAR, it's important to determine what NASCAR's payments were based on from its licensing activities, not the fact that NASCAR has fans in Ohio. No one disputes that. There are five principal errors the BTA made in this case that were referenced in our merit brief. Error one, the BTA erred by permitting the commissioner to change the legal basis for his final determination for the so-called broadcast receipts. For the vast majority of receipts at issue, approximately 70%, the commissioner originally held his final determination that NASCAR was a broadcaster, and hence the term broadcast receipts, and that NASCAR's receipts should be cited according to Division I rather than Division F of revised Code 5751.033. In fact, the commissioner held in his final determination that administrative regulation for broadcasting services applied. Everyone now agrees that NASCAR is not a broadcaster, it doesn't have its own network or channel, and it's not providing services. The commissioner's auditor even held this position as late as depositions taken at the BTA level, claiming NASCAR was a broadcaster. And when he was asked to explain why, he said he didn't know, but I quote, "Well, I know that on any given Sunday when NASCAR races are being held, no matter where they're at, I can turn on my television in Ohio and watch a race." That's in our supplement at page 29 in the record. The commissioner eventually admitted his error at the BTA. The BTA then affirmed the error. By doing so, it made at least three reversible errors. First, this court's precedent Defender holds that determining the correct statute is important, particularly between Division I and F under 5751.033. The commissioner and the BTA would have you conclude it doesn't matter what statute applies, but then ironically, they say the Defender does not apply to this case at all. This logic does not hold water. If Defender applies, it's clear that NASCAR's licensees did not benefit in Ohio, as they are all headquartered outside of Ohio, as was ADT. Second, the commissioner is expressly prohibited from changing this determination by 5703.05H. If the commissioner could do this, think of the absurdities. Could the commissioner change a CAT assessment to a sales tax assessment to BTA? Obviously, the answer should be no, and it should be no in this case. Third, the BTA can't do what the commissioner couldn't do himself. The BTA's own precedent in CARSTAR recognizes that 5703.05H precludes the commissioner from revising and changing the underlying assessment while the matter is pending before the board. You may ask yourself, why did the commissioner not just dismiss this case and issue a new assessment? Well, the reason is there was a 10-year statute of limitations, and the audit period in this case dates back to 2005 through 2010, So the commissioner couldn't do that. So the BTA allowed the commissioner to do what he shouldn't have been able to do. The second error is that the plain language of Division F prohibited citing NASCAR's intellectual property receipts to Ohio. The relevant part of subsection F, when there's a right to use in Ohio, is that it's taxable to the extent the receipts are based on the right to use the property in Ohio.
Let me ask, let's get to the substance, maybe. Let me ask you about that. So, sure. Someone gets a license from NASCAR to make bobbleheads, say. They make a Kyle Busch bobblehead in North Carolina. They sell it in Ohio. As I understand the statute, it says to the extent that the receipts are based on where the property is used, that then it's cited to Ohio. So where is, in that case, where is the intellectual property used? Is it used in North Carolina when someone uses the license from NASCAR to manufacture the bobblehead, or is it used in Ohio when some kid gets a Kyle Busch bobblehead for Christmas and decides to play with it?
Your Honor, we would hold that those receipts, unless they're specifically based on Ohio, would be cited in North Carolina. But the relevant determination is not really the state at hand. It's really inside or outside of Ohio when you're looking at this.
Okay, well, but stay with me here a second here.
Sure.
So what does it mean for it to be used? I mean, I assume that at least in the licensing standpoint, someone can figure out where property is it used. I mean, again, is it used when it's manufactured, or is it used when actually someone, has a product and plays with it or whatever, puts it on,
well,
on their mantle?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, the statute really, I mean, it breaks into two parts, right? The right to use. And it's clear that, and we concede that the licensees have the right to use the property in Ohio. They have the right to use the property in some cases worldwide. It's the second test that really gets at, you know, are the receipts based on the right to use in Ohio? And in that case,
if you're paying someone royalties based on the amount of sales, I presume you can figure out how many sales there are in what state. And if it's just a, you know, flat royalty based on the amount of sales, then it would seem that you could do that to Ohio.
The problem with that, Your Honor, is that it's not founded in statute. That would be like a look through rule. And the example I would suggest would be, let's take Fox Broadcasting, for example.
Well, I mean, I get the broadcasting one. To me, that's the state has a much tougher argument there. But I want to stick to the license fees.
Okay, sure.
So we're talking, like, I guess, property.
Yeah. So what if NASCAR manufactured, think of NASCAR as a content manufacturer, just by analogy. So if it manufactured its content, it then licensed it to a wholesaler, and that wholesaler then, you know, sold into retailers who then sold to the end consumer. You really have to go up the vertical chain. It's not that we're saying that these products, when they're sold in Ohio, don't get taxed. What it's important is who brings those products into Ohio, who actually uses, who actually does that. And that's why the statute, by using this approximation or this audience factor, and I'll stick with the population factor because that's more applicable to the manufacturers here, that's why it becomes unworkable. When this court decided Defender, you know, it looked at Professor Pomp's article on this, and Professor Pomp has a long dissertation of, you know, look, states have tried to do this dating back to the 1980s. But only two states' legislatures have put in kind of a look-through or population or audience factor since 2004. And the reason why is because of these questions that you're getting at. It's so difficult and so unworkable, and it becomes ambiguous. And, you know, at the end of the day, taxing statutes are narrowly construed. If there's ambiguity, it's resolved in the favor of the taxpayer. And so, you know, that really gets down to why inserting words into the statute, as a commissioner would do, and inventing methodologies really becomes difficult. I mean, this is information that was not in NASCAR's possession. It doesn't have this information. The commissioner then complains that NASCAR didn't provide this information when the commissioner could have used the subpoena power to obtain the information, potentially from Fox and BTI and some of these other licensee parties. But it is exactly that question that you're getting at, the root of it, the complexity. And then the fact that the statute should end on its plain words and its plain meaning.
Do we need to get to the constitutional question?
Yes. I mean, well, you only need to get to the constitutional question if you disagree with our interpretation of F. So I think the constitutional questions are very valid in this case, because just because something is put on a screen, and you've seen some of our examples of a slippery slope of, if you put something on a screen in the Netherlands or Australia or so forth, and someone makes money off that, and somehow that just ends up on a mobile device in Ohio, and now Ohio wants to tax that. And that's not that absurd of an example. We've got people making millions of dollars off YouTube, sometimes tens of millions of dollars off YouTube. That really is a slippery slope and a dangerous precedent. It becomes a watershed precedent, and it extends beyond any constitutional parameters, either from this court or the United States Supreme Court. You know, in Crutchfield, there were customers that they were shipping products into, right? At the end of the day, customers in Ohio that were getting this. So Crutchfield was directly shipping. In Wayfair, there were either property, payroll, or people. In this case, NASCAR, with respect to these receipts, has no connection with Ohio. The only connection it has are fans, and it has no contractual privity or otherwise. So this really is a reach in terms of on the constitutional side too. But Justice, I agree with you. You don't get there unless F is interpreted differently. And I think on its plain, ordinary meaning, when you look at based on, both this court and the United States Supreme Court has said based on means something's dependent upon something. It serves as a foundation for. And how can NASCAR's receipts form a foundation or be dependent upon it when it receives a fixed fee in many cases, right? A one-time annual fixed fee, and it doesn't make a dollar more. I use the broadcast receipts, but we can go with any of them. You know, I use the broadcast receipts. It doesn't make another dollar if there's another viewer in Ohio, right? At the end of the day.
That's not true of the licensing fees, right? I mean, the more.
Well, just a one contract. That's correct, Justice. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I understand your argument with as far as the broadcasting fees. I mean, it seems pretty clear that there's no, what they get paid is not based on the right to use in Ohio, but the merchandise licensing fees seems more difficult.
Yeah, well, the merchandise, I mean, wasn't based on sales into Ohio, it was sales anywhere. And in that case, the territory was much broader than even the domestic territory. And that's one thing I do want to bring up is that, you know, the commissioner, you know, limited this territory in all cases to the United States. But, you know, if you look at his final determination, it, you know, it says, you know, how many countries, 150 different countries, you know, it's televised all over the world and shows the market. And NASCAR's just, you know, it's trying to get at the theme that NASCAR's too big to tax, which is the wrong, you know, the wrong sort of analysis that we just skip over the statutes. But I think it's important to note that, you know, you would have to look through, if you looked at that manufactured product, you'd have to look through several levels. I mean, and that's what this court's rejected in several cases. It's what the commissioner rejected, even in its Lexmark brief, that we're not going to look at your customers and so forth. And that becomes a slippery slope. And then we have to differentiate and say, well, it was used where it was sold, even if it was a direct sale by the licensee, which in many cases it's not. And if it is, if we're going to say that, that's an ambiguity that I think, you know, goes against the precedent of this court that would be resolved in the favor of the commissioner as opposed to the taxpayer.
Okay, so if the property were specifically bought for use in Ohio, you agree that would be taxable. But if it's a flat fee and it could be used anywhere within the United States, you're saying we shouldn't come up, or you shouldn't come up with a proportion of its use in Ohio that would be taxable. Do I have that right?
Justice, it's mostly there, but not all the way. I mean, I think we have to really look at the statute and narrow down to the words, and that those receipts that the licensee pays NASCAR have to be based on the right to use in Ohio. So you have to look at each circumstance pretty carefully, but in all of these licensing agreements, none of them are based on the right to use in Ohio.
But if it's based on the right to use in the United States and it's used in Ohio, should we be, or you be, looking at what proportion of use actually occurs in Ohio and that be taxable?
No, Your Honor, because that gets into what the commissioner's trying to get us into, which is, I think, is a misdirection, which is a reasonable approximation. And even the limited states that have done that have statutes, they have administrative rules, they've gone through public comment and processes to get there. In this case, those words don't appear in the statute. We have to add language to the statute. To the extent that you can't determine where it's used, you'll look at the population. The commissioner's had, you know, 21 years to adopt administrative rule here. has not adopted administrative rule. And that's assuming that that administrative rule would even be constitutional as applied to NASCAR.
Well, and I'm not saying looking at the population, but I'm saying looking at the use. I mean, does NASCAR have a way that it quantifies how that property, intellectual property, is being used state by state? And if so, should NASCAR be required on that basis to pay taxes?
Well, if that was in the law, then NASCAR would definitely collect those records, but it has no business case to create those records. And what it did is it based off the taxation off the records that it had in its possession. And again, I think the statute would have to give notice to the taxpayer that that's how it was going to tax. Otherwise, we lack certainty, we lack predictability, the type of transparency that we need with taxing statutes. At the end of the day, taxing statutes are taking. And remember that we're looking with hindsight back to periods that started in 2005, and those words didn't appear in the statute. I mean, I understand the comments, but I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but that led to my question about the constitutional question, because if what I was just saying and that you were arguing against were the case, I mean, wouldn't that be an infringement on interstate commerce?
Yes, it would be. Yes, it would be. So I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Hayden. Okay, Mr. Rockenbach.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. I apologize, my camera seems to be acting up a little bit, but before diving into the statutory and constitutional issues presented by this appeal, I'd like to briefly emphasize two principles that drive Ohio's commercial activity tax. The first is that the General Assembly enacted the CAT to remedy some of the inequities of the old tax regime. Whereas under the old tax regime, the General Assembly imposed a high tax on a narrow number of entities, permitting larger, savvier corporations to structure their affairs to evade taxation and to thus shift that tax burden onto smaller corporations. The CAT imposes a small, just 0.26% tax on a wider number of business entities with a baseline presence in Ohio. Second, as this court explained in Ohio Grocers Association, the CAT is not a tax on transactions. It is instead a tax on the privilege of doing business in Ohio that is measured by gross receipts. These principles also drive the intellectual property division, section 5751.033F, which tells us how to cite as receipts from the sale of intellectual property. The key sentence of that provision says, if the receipts are based on the right to use the property and the payor has the right to use the property in this state, then the receipts from the grant of the right to use such property shall be cited to this state to the extent the receipts are based.
Let me stop you there. I mean, how can you say that the broadcasting rights, for example, are based on the right to use the property in the state? Those rights are the same, whether, you know, regardless of how many people watch NASCAR in Ohio.
Right. So the second sentence, Your Honor, only asks whether the right to use, whether the receipts from the right to use the intellectual property in Ohio are based. That's the source of the receipts. It's a different metric than the first sentence. And so if we walk through the text of the provision, the first clue is the word "to the extent." That suggests a sliding scale, an estimation of an amount. The second clue is the term "based on." As the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, has repeatedly said, that suggests but-for causation. We posit here that that means that you simply ask, but for the inclusion of Ohio in the bundle of territorial rights, what would the receipts have been? This also accords with the structure.
But you don't really have an answer to that question, right? I mean, you have a really wildly rough approximation that is based on the total, what Ohio's population is compared to the rest of the country, regardless of whether more people watch NASCAR in North Carolina or whether there's people who are watching it in Europe or whatever else, right?
So, 3 points on that. The first is that we would only have to determine the amount of actual users when the receipts are based on the actual use. That would be the first sentence of Division F. The second answer is, if we think about how this would work out in an easier case, perhaps instead of saying Fox receives the rights to use intellectual property throughout the United States for $150 million, it might have written the contract in a way that says Fox receives the right to use the intellectual property in all of these states listed out and assigned a $5 million value to Ohio. In that case, we would know which receipts the right to use Ohio, the right to use the property in Ohio came from. Our case isn't actually any different under the law, under the statute. The only difference is that we don't have direct information about that value. In that case, the CAT statute, especially here where NASCAR failed to file a return, authorizes the commissioner to use any information within his possession. And this board ultimately reviews the board's determination that that value was correctly estimated for reasonableness. Here, the number of households with cable televisions, 4%, amounts to a reasonable estimation of that value. To hold otherwise would greatly undermine the purpose of the CAT, one of which was to prevent corporations from structuring their affairs in a way that evades taxation. There's no economic difference between the contract that NASCAR has with Fox here and another contract that lists out all 50 states. And so the ultimate difference between those two provisions isn't one as a matter of law under the statute, but is instead one of facts as that relies on what the commissioner has in his possession.
So I'm curious, I mean, this may be a little bit side point, but does the tax department do other sports and other intellectual property the same way? I mean, with English Premier League, for example, would it have the same kind of calculation for their United States rights?
I'd love to be able to answer that, Your Honor, as the tax commissioner is entirely committed to applying the same rules to everyone. But under Ohio law, the information about other tax returns is confidential unless there's an appeal. So I can't directly answer that, but I can tell you that the commissioner would apply the same approach in all circumstances. Once we know that a entity like NASCAR has gross receipts that pull it under the CAT, we would apply the same approach, seek information from the taxpayer, and then if we don't get that information, use the information in the tax commissioner's possession to make a reasonable estimate in that absence, which is exactly what the statute permits the commissioner to do. Here, the commissioner relied on the households with televisions, which I think is a closer estimate to the number of the watchers in the state than just the general population, and that was entirely reasonable. If I may address—
Well, counsel, before you get there, let's go back to Justice DeWine's bobblehead questions. These bobbleheads are manufactured, I don't know, overseas, Taiwan. They're obviously the manufacturer and then the distributor have an agreement. And then the distributor is not the distributor paying a tax on these bobbleheads in Ohio?
So there's a good chance, especially if the distributor has a baseline presence, that they would be paying that tax.
Okay, so they're paying a CAT tax in Ohio based on these bobbleheads, right?
Yes.
And then you want NASCAR to pay a tax based on the same bobbleheads.
Well, that is the result of a choice that the General Assembly made to tax gross receipts as opposed to taxing income. And to compensate for that, the CAT tax is a very small tax, just 0.26%.
Oh, I understand, but you know, that's neither here nor there when we're talking about the application of the statute. Well, what about the manufacturer? You know, it's a entity outside of the United States. Are they subject to CAT tax?
Well, they would first have to meet the baseline presence requirements. Here, NASCAR meets those requirements through the races that it holds in Ohio. So that's one check on that fact. If they do meet the baseline presence requirements, the statute doesn't draw a distinction. We would treat them the same way.
Okay, so potentially Ohio is taxing these bobbleheads from three different entities.
Right, it's imposing a small tax on three different entities as opposed to maybe a large tax on one entity. And if I may address the argument that the board couldn't affirm the assessment based on the intellectual property division. The statutes 5703.05 clearly give the board broad authority to modify, remand, or affirm assessments, valuations, and determinations. Here, the board acted properly. It affirmed the assessment. It at most implicitly modified the determination, but the statute permits it to do so. They argue that another statute prevents the commissioner from changing the determination pending appeal, but that statute doesn't prevent the board from modifying the determination as part of its final order. And I think this court's case law bears that out. For instance, in Key Services v. Zano, this court said that the board works independently of the commissioner, its findings are de novo. And in Krenbrink v. Testa, this court applied those principles to affirm a theory of liability that the tax commissioner raised for the first time in the middle of the board's proceedings. As for the statute of limitations argument, that only applies to the making or issuing of an assessment. The statute of limitations statute defines assessment to mean a notice of payment or underpayment. And that notice here was issued on December 24th, 2012, making it timely. Now, what happens to a determination or a reassessment? Those are different words under the statutes, and that doesn't trigger the statute of limitations. There's an analogous provision, RC 5703.60, that says that in response to a petition for reassessment, the commissioner can issue a corrected assessment, and that corrected assessment relates back in time to the original assessment. That's essentially what's happening here. If the court doesn't have any other questions about those statutory provisions, I could briefly address the constitutional issues.
All right, go ahead.
So on the preserved constitutional issues, this court can quickly dispatch those. This court in Crutchfield held that the baseline presence test of 500,000 gross receipts in Ohio satisfies the Commerce Clause, and that's what happened here. For the fairly apportioned, the taxes here were fairly apportioned for all the same reasons that they are reasonable under the statute. It's a fair estimation of the value that the right to use the intellectual property in Ohio added to the contract. As for the substantial nexus to the transaction arguments, we again assert that they haven't preserved these by raising them in the notice of appeal to the board, but even if they had, this court would have to remand to the board to find facts about the substantial nexus to the activity. For instance, what exactly how NASCAR's activities in Ohio specifically promoted the value of its intellectual property.
Can we go back to your statutory arguments? I'm still struggling with what it means to use NASCAR's intellectual property. So you'll go back to this example about the something that's manufactured wherever it is, Taiwan, North Carolina, and then it's sold in Ohio. When is NASCAR's property used in Ohio?
So in your hypothetical, are the receipts based on the amount of use, the actual use?
I just want to understand used. I want to understand what it means to use intellectual property.
So
if someone manufactures something using NASCAR's intellectual property, they're using NASCAR's intellectual property, correct?
Yes.
What about when I go buy that for my son? Is it being used then?
I think it'd be being used at the point of sale as well.
Okay. What if my son sells it to another kid in his class? Is it being used then?
I think it's being used then, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the upstream owner of the intellectual property would be taxed on each of those transactions. That the place, we're ultimately just looking at the relationship between NASCAR and Fox. Has Fox purchased the right to use intellectual property in Ohio?
Well, I'm not on Fox. To me, that's easy. What I'm on is these licensing fees for individual products. Because I'm struggling to understand how you cite, it's citus based on where the receipts being based on the right to use property in the state. Under the statute.
So I'm not sure that the legal challenge to those particular transactions is before the court. I think that
licensing fee transaction is certain. You have this theory on the licensing fees that you're entitled to a proportional share based on Ohio's population. So
I think so I believe that those contracts are structured to be keyed off the amount of use in the state, and it's where the
is that where the ultimate end user ends up? I mean, you're approximating something when the tax commissioner says that they are basing it on the proportional share of Ohio's population. So I'm trying to figure out what it is you're approximating.
Right. So it's the approximation is what portion of the receipts come from the amount of use. And in the absence, so one way that they could determine that is by keeping track of where everything is sold and keeping track of each of the receipts that come from each individual state. But in the absence of that specific information, it's fair to use population metrics as a rough estimate for that. The Multi-State Tax Commission supports that approach. And at the very least, that approach is fair in a case like this.
So anytime something is sold that has NASCAR intellectual property, that's when it's used?
I think that's going to be right, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that purchaser uses it, like especially in a way that's going to relate back to NASCAR.
So if NASCAR sells the rights to use its intellectual property, maybe just the name, maybe a logo, how is it supposed to know all the products it would be used on unless it was clearly defined in a contract? And therefore, how would it even be able to determine the proportionality for Ohio of something that was maybe a nationwide flat fee agreement to use its property? It has to be the population. So you're just saying based on Ohio population compared to the
Either it could keep track of all that information, or it could use population as a rough estimate the way that we have here. I in terms of just figuring out where the proportionality ends up, I don't see any problem. And the Multi-State Tax Commission, for instance, clearly authorizes using population. We wouldn't have had a problem citing those by population. So in terms of attributing where the intellectual property is used, I think the population is a perfectly fair metric.
I mean, because like if I buy a photo from Shutterstock, you know, they don't know how many times I'm going to use it unless they put a limit on it, or where I'm going to use it and where it's going to show up. It doesn't seem like it's that much different from what's happening here. And where is the notice in the statute that they have to do all this record keeping?
So 2 points, Your Honor. The first is, as we've said, population would be a fair metric. The second is that it sounds like these hypotheticals are going to the first sentence of Division F, which only applies when NASCAR's receipts are based on the amount of use. If NASCAR's receipts are based on the amount of use, then obviously it's going to have to do some of that tracking anyways in order to calculate how much it's going to get paid. This is an entirely different situation where it's based on the receipts are based on the right to use. Fox purchased the right to use upfront. It's the money that NASCAR received didn't have anything to do with where Fox ultimately used those rights. What matters is that it purchased the right to use in Ohio, and under the statute, we can tax the value that the right, including the right to use in that transaction, added to the transaction.
And the metric that is being used is the number of televisions in Ohio? Is that what you're telling me?
So for this audit period, the commissioner used the number of households with televisions in Ohio.
Well, counsel, wait a minute. Is that the presumption that everybody that has a household with television watches NASCAR? Because, you know, if I was pulled on that, they wouldn't be including my household. So I'm wondering, how does that become a legitimate, you know, even a legitimate starting point?
So the starting point is the text of the statute, which indicate what the CAT says, that when an entity fails to file a return, the commissioner can rely on any information in his possession. Here, the commissioner could have used population. He used households with televisions, which is a slightly more precise way to calculate the proportion than population, and that only meant a small increase in the percentage. If the court finds that that particular approach was not reasonable, then it can remand for the board to apply the population metrics, which are just like 0.5% lower than that. But I don't think that we can fault the commissioner for trying to get a closer gauge as to what NASCAR's viewership audience was by using households' televisions versus the population metrics, which I think we all believe would be reasonable.
Thank you. You've used your time. Okay. Mr. Hayden, you've used your time as well. You may take 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to point out a few things in going through my colleague talked about. It seems to want to argue policy and looking at clues as opposed to rather than the statute. And I think we need to look back at the plain, ordinary meaning of the statute. And I'll just give you an example. Under the administrative reg for services, which is what the commissioner originally wanted to tax us under broadcast services, there's 57 examples with different standards on how to apply the CAT. So trying to say that there's some market-based, broad-based standard that applies, it's just not correct. You've got to look at each individual statute and interpret that statute and apply that statute in accordance with its plain meaning. I think it's interesting, and I think everyone struggles with use, but I think that the second category here, or of the second test, which my colleague has admitted that that is the second test, and that's what is applicable, is are the receipts based on? NASCAR didn't perform some sham transaction or subterfuge to get around this. These are contracts that have been in place since 2005 and before. These are long-term contracts that are repeated. They couldn't have anticipated the Ohio CAT law and how that was going to apply. These are real economic transactions. And what the commissioner has proposed, I just want to say, the information in this case was population information that was taken from infoplease.com, which was a quiz show website, and then wanted to take unverified information from another audit that they first said was Nielsen ratings. And only on deposition did we learn that those weren't ratings at all. They were just the number of cable TV houses or households with cable TVs, not whether they were ever turned on or even tuned into NASCAR, as the Chief Justice points out. So I think those are important. If this is where that slippery slope comes in, that if we allow this type of ad hoc type of taxation to take place, think about taxpayers that don't have the resources of NASCAR to defend on these cases. I mean, this could be a watershed case, that anything that ends up on a screen or a shelf in Ohio is somehow taxed now to the content creator. I mean, that's not only against the statute, but it's unconstitutional. I think that, you know, in terms of the CARSTAR case, I just want to go back to that real quickly. It's clear in that statute that the commissioner can't change his final determination. We're not talking about key services where they're bringing up additional arguments. We have no problem with that. We all know that that's the way that the BTA level applies. This is a case where they completely changed their entire statutory method, the statutory section that they applied upon, changed it from services to intellectual property receipts at the appellate level before the Board of Tax Appeals. And the Board of Tax Appeals' own precedent says, we can't do what you can't do, Commissioner. We can't look at a broad statute that says that the Board of Tax Appeals can remand. Matter of fact, that CARSTAR case comes out of where the commissioner was testing the limits and trying to increase an assessment at the time of the Board of Tax Appeals, and the Board of Tax Appeals said, no, time out, you can't do that. Well, why should they be able to change their entire basis at that point? And I think on the constitutional case, I'll just mention a couple of cases. Greenscape says that you don't have to have, you know, everything pled out for a constitutional claim. You claim commerce clause and that's enough, because we don't want to take a hyper-technical reading. That's this court's own holding. And then in Corrigan, there needs to be not only nexus over NASCAR or the taxpayer, there has to be nexus over the transactions at issue. NASCAR did all of these activities outside of Ohio. Only its licensees or their in turn sub-licensees brought the property into Ohio. And with that, I'll rest.
Thank you, Mr. Hayden. Thank you, gentlemen. We will take your matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision.
Thank you.